Before we begin, let's take a few moments to put our hands together to worship the Savior, the Sage, the one who sacrificed countless lifetimes to strive, perfecting his perfections, sacrificing countless lifetimes to fulfill his Sila, Samadhi, Prajna, so that he can become the Buddha, to preach the Dhamma, the pure Dhamma, to heal the hearts and mend the minds of countless individuals. So let's put our hands together to worship the Supreme Buddha by chanting the Namaskara 3 times, all together and with me. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Another week has gone by, and we're coming closer and closer to the end of the year. September is the 9th month, almost the end of September. Then we have October, November, then December, then we welcome 2026. Just making sure. We enter 2026. We welcome 2026 with open hands. And then we have a January, and then February, and then March, then April, May, June, July, August, September, October, November, December. And then we open our arms for 2027. They say time flies when you're having fun. It's very interesting, isn't it? That convention, how we conventionally are coming towards an end of a year. But if you were to live without seeing the calendar, do you feel the end of the year approaching? Do you know that, you know, today is, you know, in a couple more days, September is over, we're going to enter October? Something you will realize is it's raining. We're going through the rainy season. It's not raining. We're going through a drought season. It's colder than normal. It's warmer than normal. And therefore, you'll be able to, you know, not say an exact day or a month, but you'll have some sort of understanding of how time is part, or how the seasons are changing. But you will not be able to say, you know, next month is October. It's very interesting how in convention we are coming closer to the end of the year, but in reality, a mind just passed. Another mind just passed. Another mind just passed. How, you know, we feel as though, you know, this is the end of September, entering October. October, you know, we've got this and this and this. As I remember, Children's Day is coming up, and there's lots of other special events coming up. But in reality, what's happening? A mind arose and passed. Another mind arose and passed. But for some of you, you know, it's almost a shock that we're ending September. Why? Because you just remember, you still remember, you know, at the beginning of the year, January, February, you know, you're still trying to, you know, accept that, you know, we just passed another, you know, February, March, April. It's because, you know, in our lives, we're very busy. very busy. We've got hundreds of things to do. Every day we have things to do. Just think about it. Look at how you spend your time. Now, when I say busy, it doesn't always have to be something proactive or something that's efficient. We do try to busy ourselves, try to do something to make sure, you know, we have something to do. We love being busy. You know, even though, you know, people start complaining, you know, work is very hard, I'm always very busy. The busyness, we enjoy. Always having something to do, we enjoy. If we weren't busy, we find ways to become busy. I mean, that's one of the purposes of having that rectangle in your pockets. To find a way to be busy. Either doing something that's efficient and useful, or doing something that's absolutely useless. But still, you're trying to make yourself busy. You see, with this concept of busyness, you know, or you know, how we like being busy, and this makes time go really fast. This is why when you do something you enjoy, if you do something you enjoy, time goes in a flash. But when you do something that you don't like, time feels that it's like stretching. That somehow, you know, a minute feels like hours. Like you've all been there, you know. You know, when you're waiting for something to happen. Say, for example, at, say, 12:30. At 12:30. Or even better. Just remember your past. Do you remember the times where, you know, you had something really important that's going to happen at a certain time? For example, let's say at 4:30 p.m. you're going to meet a certain someone. You're going to meet a certain someone at 4:30. Until 4:30, what happens? You are constantly looking at the clock, waiting. Okay, still 3. Right? Now you're pacing up and down. Try and distract yourself. You look at the time again, it's now what? 3:02. You know, you try to do something, you know, you're trying to clean a place, trying to do, you know, trying to spend this time. But every time you look at the clock, 3:05. You have to wait all the way until 4:30. See, when there's something that you're going to enjoy in the future, and you know that it's going to be, you know, something that you enjoy or you like, the time you're spending now feels as though it's stretching. Feels as though it's going to take hours. But then when you do the thing that you like, for example, when you're talking with a friend, you look one way, look the other, an hour has passed. I'm sorry, you have to leave. I'm sorry, we have to go now. You know, have you not been on those phone calls that, you know, you start talking and then you look at the time and, you know, someone's changed the clock? Have you been on those phone calls? You look at the time and someone's changed the clock because you just felt as though you just answered and an hour or two have gone by. Why is that? Why do we feel that, you know, time feels that it's going faster one time and then slower the other? Because we know, in reality, we know that a mind is a mind. And that all our minds are working the same way. Like, I think we talked about this before. You know, if you are smarter, does it mean your mind goes faster? If you are, you know, if you are, you know, you're an A star student, is your mind going faster than a person who gets D's and C's? How does the mind work? See, the mind, no matter how much, how smart or how busy you are, your mind works the same way. The number of minds that pass, arise and pass is the same as everyone else. But what is the difference? What is the difference? If you feel that, you know, you're able to think faster, it's not that you're thinking faster, it's that you can focus more. That more minds are arising, more minds are arising more than another person. No, rather than the minds are arising more focused on a certain thing. So for example, if I was to ask you to do a task, if I was to ask you to do a simple task, let's say, I ask you to, from here, all the way go to Dhammo, very simple task, just walk. Now, one person can just walk, you know, they're focused, their eyes are on their target, and they're focused. Every single step they're taking towards Dhammo. But there could be another person who thinks, you know, I'm going to go to the Dhammo. I'm going to go to Dhammo. I'm going to go to Dhammo. Oh, look, a tree. I'm going to go to Dhammo. I'm going to go to Dhammo. I'm going to go, oh, a butterfly. Dhammo. 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 Ah, you know, how are you? You know, I saw you're going to Dhammo, I'm going to Dhammo too. So instead of going from A to B, as simply in a straight line, it's tree, butterfly, friend, you forgot the water bottle, but you remembered you had your water, and then finally you go to B. Task is the same, A to B, simple. Difference? The focus. More minds are spent with person one. Less minds are spent with person one. More minds are spent with person two. So how will you describe the person? You say person one is very focused, very smart, doesn't waste time. Person two? They spend their time. You can't really give them responsibility because, you know, they're not focused enough. They've got other things to do. You know, they're very slow. They don't like it. But in reality, both minds are working the same way. Both minds, so if this took, say, 10 minds, theoretically, to do A to B, this one took 100. The same numbers, the same time, so when 10 minds have passed for person 1, 10 minds have passed for person 2. The only difference is the focus. So are you smarter? Are you not as smart? Can you think quicker? No, you can focus better. So, you know, when we talk about busyness, we're talking about, you know, I'm very busy. When we're very busy, we have lots of things to think about. For example, let's say you have 5 businesses. 5 businesses. You have now lots of things to think about. When you have lots of things to think about, you are now using all your minds or majority of the minds to do what? To think about how you're going to improve your businesses or, you know, I've got this loss. Why am I losing here? How am I going to improve this? How am I going to do that? You have lots of things to think about. Now, we like being busy. Because when we're not busy, our mind still arises. The one thing that we hate doing is being bored. We hate being bored. That's why if you were left in a room with a pen, within 5 minutes, what's going to happen? You'll pick the pen up. If there's no paper, you'll write on your hand. If there's no, if not, you'll be throwing the pen up and down. Now, you've probably seen it, you know, in classrooms. You know, when people, you know, are bored, what do? They'll do something. Because we hate boredom. And it doesn't always have to be something that gives them pleasure. Just something to get rid of boredom. Because I don't like being bored. I think we talked about this before as well. But it's very interesting. You know, there's an experiment done where a person will be left in a room and all there is a button. Right? Before they send the person to the room, they show this button and say, when you press this, you will get electric, you'll get a small electric shock. And, you know, they allow them to press it before entering the room. Ow. So they know pressing the button hurts. When they're left in the room with just this button, what do you think majority of the people did? What do you think majority of the people did? They don't like being bored. So what do they do? Ow. It hurts. 5 minutes later. Ow. It hurts. 3 minutes later. Ow. Hurts. And then? Ow. 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 Because what's worse than physical pain? What is worse than physical pain? Mental. What's worse than physical pain? Mental pain. You know, you could, there's a limit to what your body can bear in physical pain. Technically, you know, when we feel pain, that's not the maximum we can bear. I mean, you've seen it, right? You know how, you know, you've probably seen people when they go and say they go to the gym, they're lifting up, you know, hundreds of kilograms. Their body is screaming in pain, but they bear it. Or you know how people, they'll cram themselves into, you know, say for example, they'll cram their feet into small shoes, or they'll cram themselves into I don't know. Have you ever had the experience of putting, you know, on really skinny jeans? And how your feet get crushed? Yet you bear the pain. So to what limit can your body bear pain? Until it faints. That is its limit. But worse than physical pain is mental pain. Honestly, we can probably stand arbitrary, and if we gave pain an arbitrary value, maybe 500 units of pain, physical pain. But when it comes to mental pain, no more than 10. We succumb to mental pain than physical. Because we can't stand it. So for example, boredom is what? A mental pain. So you'll do whatever you can to get out of it. And talking about buttons, you know, if there was a button that says do not press, do not touch, ...99% of all people do what? Why is it? It says do not do it. Then why press it? Why press it? It says, it clearly states, do not press. But why do people press it? Because they can't handle what? Mental pain. Because when they say do not press, the first question is what? When a button says do not press, what's the first question that comes to your head? Why? What happens if I press it? Will something happen? Will something not happen? Giving rise to what in the mind? Vexation. And it rises up high and high and high and high, and then it comes to the point where you can no longer bear the mental pain, the mental vexation. Therefore you press it. Therefore, you press it. Not because, you know, you want to press it. No, because you can't bear the mental pain, the mental vexation. You can't bear it one bit. The moment it appears, you think, I have to press it. Because that's the only way you think will relieve what? This mental suffering, this mental, you know, this itch inside. The only way I can relieve this itch is by itching, by pressing this button. So we like making ourselves busy. That's why, you know, we like taking upon lots and lots of things to make sure that, you know, I have lots of things to do. That's why, you know, we enjoy, even though we see things to be a burden. For example, you know, having a child is a burden, but we enjoy it. Because why? Your mind is now busy. Now you think about, oh, did the person eat? Did the person sleep? Did the person do this? Did the person do that? And now you're busying the mind because the mind doesn't like being bored. Because boredom is what? A mental vexation. The mind hates being bored. Hates this mental vexation. So you'll find ways to become busy. And the more busy we are, the more the mind will arise. The more the minds arise, the more focused the mind is, the less it can feel time pass. And therefore you say what? You know, September went by in a flash. I don't remember September. You know, I just remember, you know, I'm still living in April here, in the New Year's. Oh, you know, I'm still living in 2021. Or 2020. Because the more the mind arises focused on something, the less you're able to focus on how much time you think time has passed. How much time you think time had passed. Because remember, time is what? Time is something the mind can feel. Time is something that the mind can feel. So, if you're focused on something, that's why, you know, when you're doing something that you like, you're focused. You're focused very much on it. That's why people who draw, if they are a drawing fanatic, when they start drawing, hours can go by and they won't feel it. That's why, you know, you could stay glued onto a sofa. You can stay glued onto a sofa, not realizing how much time has gone by. The only time you realize time has gone by is when the film ends or when the TV show or TV program ends. That's when you know, oh, half an hour is gone, an hour and a half is gone, the film has ended. If it didn't end, if it's something that you enjoy, you would watch it for hours and hours and hours. This is why we like busying ourselves with things that we like doing. That's why we like putting lots and lots of things into our timetable. I mean, doing things that we like. See, think about this. When you have free time, what is the first thing you do? When you get free time, what's the first thing that you do? What is the first thing that you do? For some of you, it'll be, you know, I have nothing to do. Pick up the phone. For some of you, you know, you look around. Is there anyone I can talk to? Anyone I can have like a small chin wag with? Or not, you know, when you have free time, do you draw? Do you paint? What do you do in your free time? Just look at the books of children. Usually the back pages. What is it filled with? Free time. Why? Because whenever they feel free, what do? Turn to the back pages and doodle. Why do they doodle? See, they don't doodle because they want to doodle. They doodle because They want to busy the mind. Because the moment they stop, the moment you don't do anything that you like, now the mind will give you hell. Why do you think, right? Imagine this place that gives you free food, a free place to stay, right? You know, a free bed, even free healthcare. Why do people call that a prison? When you are in prison, you get free food. You get a free place to stay. If you get sick, I think they give you free healthcare as well. As far as I know. But why do people not want to go to prison? Because when they're in prison, I can't do what? I can't do what I want. I can't leave. I can't talk to people I want to talk to. No, I'm stuck in this cell. I have to follow what they're sending me. And I don't like that. I can no longer keep my mind busy. See, what is the worst punishment they give in an ordinary jail? Solitary confinement. What does that mean? You're in a room. The only difference is, it has a bed, has you know, a toilet and everything it needs. The only problem is, you're by yourself, and there's no light. Oh no, no light, all by myself. How am I going to survive? Because now you have nothing to do. You're alone with your mind. I mean, technically, that is it's a bliss, is it not? You don't need to talk to anyone. You don't need to care what you look like, right? You can wake up one morning and, you know, fall asleep and sleep for hours. You know, some people can see it as a bliss, but it's not, because why? Your mind is now free. It doesn't have something to do. And when it has something, when it doesn't have anything to do, it feels bored. When it feels bored, it feels this massive urge to do something but can't. Do something but can't. Vexation rises and people can go crazy. They say if you leave a person in absolute silence for about 5 minutes, they will go crazy. So, you know, there are some rooms that people use to test certain things, right, where the walls are covered in a sand sponge that is able to absorb all sounds. So if you're left in this room with the door closed, the lights off, they say if you leave yourself for 5 minutes, you can go crazy. You can go crazy not because of the lack of sound or the lack of sight, the lack of seeing. You go crazy because you're alone with the mind. The mind is giving a lot of vexation and cannot relieve it. You're left with your own thoughts. Because then and there, do you realize how much your mind is actually vexing? How much the mind is truly crying when you're left alone with your thoughts? You know, those of you who have the guts, just one day, just do nothing, nothing at all. Right? You, those of you at the monastery, just stay at the Valley Mona for say 6 hours. If you're at home, you're doing nothing. You just sat there on a chair. Doing nothing. See how long you can do nothing for? Because it's funny, you know, if you say you try doing this in the Valley Mona, right? You know, in the meditation area. Say you're sat down. You've been here, say, you've been there for, say, half an hour. Now you have the sudden urge to, you know, stand up. Maybe walk. You're walking not because you want to walk, but you want to experience a difference. Why? Because you want the mind to arise with something. Something different. You see, you know, you hear a rustle in the trees. You go look. Not because you want to look, because you can't handle what? This mental pressure that builds up. Your mind is crying day in and day out, but you don't see it. You don't hear it because why? You make your mind busy. For example, if I asked one of the Anagarika Mahatmas, you know, in the middle of the sermon to drop a plate. Right, while I'm talking, it's just randomly, at a random time, to drop a saucer. Let it shatter. Most of you won't be able to stop yourself from turning around to seeing what's happened. Why? Because your mind is crying. Your mind is under so much vexation. Your mind is under so much vexation. It cannot stop. It can't stop itself. Well, very simply, if I was to take one here and not drop it, but just to keep it on the edge, how many of you will be able to listen to what I'm going to say? I mean, you'll be listening. But every now and then, you'll be... See? It's not fallen yet. But every now and then, especially when you hear, if I start to... You're now thinking, I don't want it to fall, so I'm going to have to catch it. Right? But if I didn't mind. If it wasn't... But if I was to shake the table, now what? You're thinking, will it fall? You know, it's here. Don't worry. But yeah, your mind is what? Constantly screaming. But you can't hear it scream. Because why? You're busy. You've got lots of things to do. You don't hear it scream because why? You're busy. You've got lots of things to do. You know, after the sermon, we've got Buddha Puja, and the Buddha Puja, I have to, you know, I'm going to say these gathas, and after gathas, I have to go, you know, we've got Pindapatha, and don't forget, today we have what? The blood donation campaign, right? I'm going to give blood. Oh, I don't like giving blood. It hurts a bit, but it's okay. And now you create this massive story. What? What for? To keep yourself what? Busy. To keep yourself what busy. And after that, you're going to have Guru Hanuman's sermon. I wonder what he's going to attend the sermon. Will he talk about this and that and this and that? Or maybe will he talk a bit more about this? Again, you're trying to busy your mind at this moment. Because why? You don't like hearing your mind scream. That's why if you were left alone in the Valley Mall all by yourself, you can't stand, you won't be able to stand it. This is why most of you don't like it. Staying there for a long, long, long time. See, I challenge you. I challenge you. Next time you go to the Valley Mall, stay sat. No standing. You can stretch your legs. Now, I'm not inhumane saying that you have to keep your legs, you know, one way. No, you can stretch your legs. But you cannot stand up. If you fall, I mean, if you need to go to the toilet, go to the toilet. I'm not trying to say, you know, don't do anything. But try to stay in one place. Try to stay in one place. I remember a challenge that Guru Hanuman once gave some of our monks. It was, for the next 1 hour, only stay in one tile. For the next hour, stay in only one tile. So you can sit on that tile, you can stand on the tile, but no more than this tile. See how long you can do. So if when next time you're in the Valley Mall, stay sat. Don't start walking. I mean, if you're sleepy and whatnot, I'm not being inhumane and saying that, no, don't do anything, just stay sat. No, you know, even if you're dying, stay sat. No, I'm saying try. Right? Try to stay sat. See if you can hear your mind scream. You know, sometimes when you're meditating or saying in the Valley Mall, right, and you keep your eyes closed, sometimes you just feel the urge to open your eyes. Why? Because your mind is screaming. let me see something. Let me see color. Let me perceive something else. Therefore, you open your eyes. This is the thing, right? We really like busying ourselves, like giving ourselves hundreds of things to do, so we cannot hear our mind scream. Can't hear our mind say, you know, I can't, we can't, you know, we can't do this anymore. I want to do this, I want to do that, but I can't do this. You know, challenge yourself. See if you can stay still. See if you can stay for a couple hours doing nothing. Not even contemplating, let's say. Not even contemplating, just sat there doing nothing. There and then you realize how urgent it is. How much the mind wants to do something. How much it can't stay still. You'll be thinking about what you're doing yesterday, what you're doing tomorrow, what you're going to do, you know, in 3 years, what you're going to do, what happened 2 years ago, or, you know, whether you did this, whether you did that. Just look at the mind. See how much the mind is screaming. How it screams its lungs out. The mind doesn't have lungs. I do agree. See it tried to scream to get rid of this vexation that builds. You know, you don't really understand how much your mind enjoys seeing until what? Until you can no longer see. You don't realize how much your mind likes hearing until you can no longer hear. You don't understand how much your mind loves breathing until you find it difficult to breathe. You find it really difficult to breathe. Then do you realize how much your mind enjoys breathing? Here's the thing, you know, we have to understand this. Now, something else that we have to understand is, you know, the Dhamma is not something that can help you at the moment, the exact moment of crisis. The Dhamma isn't something that can help you at the exact moment of crisis. So that what I mean is, let's say, you know, when you are currently in a massive problem, no matter how much Dhamma you are being told, you cannot understand it. When you are angry, when you are extremely angry, when you are angry, and let's say someone's trying to explain you the Dhamma, you will not be able to understand. Because the Dhamma isn't something that can be used to cure instantly. The Dhamma is not something that can cure instantly. And the worst thing is, the Dhamma isn't something that everyone can use the same way. See, the Dhamma can only be used by people. Oh, let me say that again. The Dhamma can only be used by minds that have the wisdom to, first of all, want to get rid of whatever they want to get rid of. And number two, with the ability to understand. That is why, you know, you can't go to, like, say an animal and explain them the Dhamma. You know, the other day I got to see a kind of beautiful sight. One of our little Katie children, they were talking to an animal. Right? They were talking to, I think he was. I think he was a gecko. Right? The gecko had lost its tail, right? And this child thought this gecko must be very sad. And so this child was talking to this gecko. Right, saying, don't worry. You're only upset because you're attached to the tail. It's attachment that gives rise to vexation. It was a very funny sight to see from a distance. But it made me realize that the Dhamma is something that you is, although we talk about minds, the Dhamma is not for every mind. Now that's actually very serious. Because when I say it's not for every mind, it's the first thing that you think of, it's not for animals. That's the first thing you think of. When I say the Dhamma is not for every mind, the first thing that comes to your mind is animals can't understand. Of course they can't understand. But even worse, not all people can understand it as well. Not all people can understand it. Only those with the determination, only those with the need or the want to understand can understand it. I mean, that this is why it's like you're bringing a horse to a watering hole. You can bring the horse to, a paradise, right, filled with water. But no matter how much water there is, you can't make the horse drink. The same thing applies. No matter how great the Dhamma is, not everyone will be able to drink it. Because number one, there needs to be a need. There has to be a want. You can't force a Dhamma down someone's throat. Right? Like open up wide. And you remember how Amma used to feed you? Right? When you're late? Right? Takes the biggest bites and stuffs it into your mouth. You can't do the same thing with the Dhamma. You can't do the same thing with the Dhamma. The first thing that has to be is a need. Another thing that has to be is the intelligence to understand. If there's many other causes for the effect of understanding to arise. But these two are, I think, are one of the main. No matter how much the Dhamma, how great and how pure the Dhamma is, if there is no need, if there is no want, there's no point. If there is no need, if there's no want, there is no point. Then it falls on deaf ears. And if it falls on deaf ears, what happens is it just becomes a normal thing. That's why, in our monastery we have, say geckos all around the monastery. There's a gecko in the Dhamma hall. This gecko, every Saturday, Thursday, Wednesday, sorry, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 7 days a week, will be able to hear the Dhamma every single day. But never will it ever be able to understand. Because what? Not enough, it doesn't have the ability to think as well as it has no need. The thing is, the Dhamma is not for everyone. It's for the people who need it. Just like water is not for everyone, water is for people who are thirsty. If you're not thirsty, there's no point of water. This is why, the only time that the Dhamma can actually help you is when you need it. That's why when you're angry, when you're sad, when you're frustrated, when you're upset, when you're scared, these are the times where the Dhamma cannot enter your mind. That's when the Dhamma that's already in your mind can come out to play. But apart from that, no new Dhamma can come in. Because when the mind is vexed, when the mind has is coming currently going through lots of, say, vexation, the Dhamma cannot enter. Because vexation, what vexation does is creates a massive barrier. And this barrier is actually impenetrable. Cannot be penetrated until that barrier is no longer there. This is why when you come to your teachers with problems, the first thing they do is not tell you the Dhamma. The first thing they do is what? They create the environment for the seed of Dhamma to be planted. Just imagine, right? Let's say you're really angry. You're angry that person number two never does what you want. If your teacher comes up and says, you know, it's all because of cause and effect, what are you going to say? Yes, cause and effect, but, you know, person two doesn't do anything. Person two is not doing what I want them to do. They're going left, right, center, they're going everywhere, but not to be. The teacher will say, well, that's just how, that's because the causes have come together to give rise to this effect. But no matter how much a teacher says, you're not able to accept it because the mind is what, currently under? Instead, what the teacher will do is try to get rid of that. First of all, saying, you know, don't worry. You know, let's try to find a way to help person to understand, or they'll find a way to get rid of this wall. Once the wall is down, now the teacher can attack with all the artillery it has, he or she has. Because vexation is what builds a wall. Vexation builds a massive wall. At that point, Dhamma cannot come inside. Only the Dhamma that's within can come out. This is why, you know, the Dhamma isn't something that can cure. It is something that can prevent it happening again. The Dhamma is not something that can cure. It's something that can prevent it. It's something that can prevent, not cure. There's a difference there. Curing means, right, you know, fire, the cure for the fire, say water. Put water, fire gone. Instead, the Dhamma is what? Fire. Why is there a fire? Let me get rid of the causes. By getting rid of the causes, this fire will also reduce 100%, but it's not as instant. It's not instant. It takes time. It takes a lot of energy. But no longer will there be a fire, because there's no causes for the fire. Before, when you put water on the fire, once the water evaporates and the environment is again correct, or the environment is right for fire to rise again, there will be more fire. That's why, you know, when you are angry, people will say, you know, when you're angry, to go and go to a different place and release your anger. How? Maybe by screaming into a pillow or counting to five or whatnot. Those are ways of suppressing. So putting water to the fire. The fire will reduce, but the fire is not gone. Instead, once you're able to understand the situation, the fire has reduced to a level that you're able to accept the Dhamma. Now you're getting rid of the causes, so there's no more fire. Ever. This is why, you know, it's very important for us to understand that what we're doing now is getting rid of the causes for the future. Future meaning not the future, but for the changing the conditions for the minds to arise without vexation. Let's explain this, right? Now, you know, we normally talk about anger.
or sadness.
But, you know, there are other emotions that, you know, we all feel. And, you know, are all based on what? Based on a fallacy. And only once you understand this fallacy, only once you understand this fallacy, do these feelings go. So let's take another feeling. Let's take the feeling of humans are very advanced people, or very advanced things, beings. But yet, we are able to be controlled by what? By fear. You know, if you were ever to, you know, go through the lists of things people are scared of, the list is forever long. What is the first thing? What is the thing that majority of people are scared of? Does anyone know? Yes. They say, you know, the first thing that everyone is scared of is death. But because everyone is scared of it, we have normalized it and said, it's okay. You know, everyone's scared of death, so put that to the side. It's okay. But majority of people, what are they scared of? What do you think they're scared of? I'll give you a clue. This thing lives in your house. No matter how much you clean your house, they find a way to come back. I mean, annoying little rascals, aren't they? They build a house within your house, as I say like that. What is it? Not what am I, what is it? What is it? The thing that many people are scared of is arachnophobia, right? Or scared of spiders. Many people are scared of spiders, right? To the extent that, you know, there are, like, I remember I had lots of friends as well as sisters who were extremely scared of what? Spiders. If there was ever a spider, the first thing you hear is, "Daddy, there's a spider in my room." And poor dad would have to come with a cup and a piece of paper to try to catch this innocent spider to set them free. But fear is something that is able to change anyone. You know, we have the fear of spiders, fear of the dark, fear of fires, fear of electricity. I remember that I've met a person who's scared of batteries. Because they think that if I was to touch the two ends of the battery, I will get electric shock. And I remember, you know, we didn't take him seriously, right? Because, you know, who's scared of batteries? Because they're going to get shocked because they're in. So we would say, you know, hold this end of the battery, right? And reluctantly, with lots of ways, we finally found that he needed to touch one end. And we would try to make them touch the other, right? But no matter how hard we try, right? Bribery, right? You know, force. This person would not. Why? Because they have this intense fear that if I was to touch the two ends of the battery, I will get electric shocked. I mean, he's scared of electricity in general, right? In general. So even if he saw, you know how sometimes, you know, especially in Sri Lanka, sometimes when you plug something in, there's like a, sometimes sparks. He's absolutely terrified of that, right? If the thing sparks, he's no longer in the room, right? He would just jump and get out because he's scared. Now, let's define what fear actually is. Whether you're scared of spiders or bugs or the dark or you know, electricity or fire or anything. Where does the fear come from? Where does fear come from? Fear comes from a very simple place. The same place that every problem comes from. From what? From what? Where does all problems start? Let me rephrase that. Where do all mental problems start? The mind, yes, yes. But where does ego start? It always starts with our best friend. Ignorance is the cause of fear. Ignorance is the cause of fear, and I'll show you why. So if we go through the process, the defilement process, right? Mental, the mind process, we'll put aside. But if we go through the defilement process, what do we have? We've got ignorance, and then? Attachment, and then? And then? Insanity mode, and then? Very simply, in a very, very, very basic manner. Remember, there's so much more in this, but Guru Ramdas has simplified this to the extent that we're able to understand, and it's very simple, because, I mean, it's a very simple process, but actually, the defilement process is much, much more complex than this is, right? You know, there are many, many other stuff. But then ego is at play. What is ego? This feeling of self or this feeling of separation, right? Now, let's take the example of spiders because, you know, majority of people don't like spiders, right? Right? We don't like them. We don't like these innocent beings making houses in houses, and therefore we ruin their houses. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't. You should. The Buddha himself has said, right, you know, if there are cobwebs, please get rid of them, right? But why does fear arise? Fear arises with this idea of ego. Ego what? Ego will be hurt. Ego will no longer be able to be there. Or something will happen to what? Me. So if you were to ask yourself, why am I scared of what I'm scared of? So let's take the example that I'm scared of spiders. Why am I scared of spiders? You're scared because you think that something is going to happen to what? Me. Because why? Because when you feel ego, you now feel this separate sense, this separate feeling, this feeling that this is separate to the entire nature, entire universe. I am separate. Therefore, I has to be protected. I have to protect me. And so when there's a, so then that's the idea that it has. And then when it sees NC1C spider, right? When it sees NC1C spider with eight legs, spiders have eight legs, yes it does, eight legs, the first thing is, your mind, before, you know, before it was ever experienced a spider, the mind was totally fine. Was it? Before it saw the spider, the mind was okay, right? 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 No. When was the mind okay? The mind was never okay. The moment we have ignorance, mind is never okay. Because why? There's always another problem. Even before the spider was there, there's always a fear. Ego always gives rise to fear. Fear of what? Fear of losing. Because the mind arises, the mind will pass. And when it passes, ego is no longer felt. When the ego is no longer felt, the mind goes, it goes chaos. But because this happens at trillion times a second, it's not, it's so trivial, so small, it's just, you know, suppressed. But there was always a problem with ego. But then, you know, you were in your room one day, right? You turn around and you see this big NC1C spider, right? Big NC1C spider. You know, just hanging there on a wall. And normally that comes as a surprise. If you don't know what a spider is and you see a spider for the first time, it comes as a surprise. Now, here's the thing. Here's where it differs. If you think spider will harm who? Me. What happens? This is no good. Get rid. Or something worse happened. What? Little Miss Tuffet sat. What? Little Miss Muffet sat on her tuffet, eating her curd and whey. Down came a spider that sat down beside her and frightened Miss Muffet away. Say you're doing something, a spider lands on you, right? You know, an innocent spider lands on you. You turn and you immediately see this thing on you. Immediately you feel what? Something's going to happen to me. And that immediate reaction gives you this immense vexation that I'm not going to be here anymore. I'm going to die, or something's going to happen to me. And that gives rise to this feeling of fear. Once it gives rise to this feeling of fear, now you do whatever you can to get rid of this. Because we don't like the feeling of fear. We don't like this feeling that something's going to happen. This feeling of uncertainty. We don't like feeling uncertain. Therefore, we say get rid. Therefore, we say get rid. Now, tell me. Does the spider know that it's landing on you? You know what I'm saying? Okay. You know, it's on the ceiling and thinking, okay, I'm going to land on this person. But yet, don't you feel that it's actually, you know, it landed on who? Me. That it wanted to land on who? Me. Because the moment you feel ego, you're now separating yourself as well as this. You're separating this spider, and you're saying this spider is thinking of finding a ways to what? Hurt? That's why, you know, when you see a snake just like slither by, you get scared, not because of the snake. You get scared because you think the snake will come back to what? To bite me. But the snake is enjoying its life, right? It also has this, right? It has its own life. It's just slithering by. But because your mind arrives with ego, what does your mind think? Oh no. Snake. Snake, bite, ego, No, don't like, get rid, run. Or get a stick and push or disturb. You are scared because in the future, something will happen to me. Something might happen to me. Therefore, you are scared. Now, let's say something does happen. Let's say something does happen. Let's say, you know, let's take the example that, you know, let's say one day, you know, you plug something in and you got shocked. Not very common in other countries, but in Sri Lanka, it's very common. You plug something in and there's a leak somewhere and you get shocked. The moment you get shocked, immediately you feel what? I mean, say a snake bites you. Say a snake bites you. What is your immediate thought? The very next thought, when you see a snake, the snake bite you, what's the next thought? I'm gonna die. I'm gonna die. I'm dead. You projected yourself into the future and said, you know, because of this snake bite, I die. You know, most snakes are actually harmless. They bite because they're scared of what's going to happen, and so they bite, but they're not venomous at all. Or their venom is not too dangerous for a human. I mean, not extremely venomous, but yeah, you project yourself and say, you know, I am going to die now. I'm going to die now. Fear that something's going to happen to me. Technically, when a snake bites, what's the worst thing you should do is the worst thing, the last thing you should do is what? The last thing you should do is get scared and run. Why is that? The moment you start being scared and you start running, right? Running to the nearest whoever, screaming and shouting, I got bit by a snake, right? And the thing is, when you say you get bit by a snake, you always think about the worst snake that could be bitten. You don't say, I got bitten by, I don't know my snakes too well. I got bitten by a garden snake. No, you say, I got bitten by a cobra. I got bitten by a Russell viper. You always think about the worst thing because you actually think that, you know, I'm going to die. And so you start running. When you start running, what happens is your heart starts pumping. And whatever venom was injected into you, if there was, starts going, running wild through your body. And you are, you know, you are causing your own death. Again, Insecurity Spider isn't what makes you scared. It's ego that gets you scared. That something's going to happen to ego. You know, Insecurity Spider, you know, is living its own life. You know, it's made its web on the corner of your room, right? Waiting to catch its flies. You know, it's thinking about its dinner it's gonna have tonight. You know, it's gonna rain today. So, you know, we're gonna have it knows that it's gonna have lots of insects and what do you call this? What I don't know the English name for this. Meru? You know, the things that come up when it starts raining, comes out and it floods the entire place looking for light. Christmas flies. They're called Christmas flies? Christmas flies. you learn something every day. Christmas flies. Christmas flies come up out of thing and starts flooding the air, and the spider thinks, you know, today I'm going to enjoy a feast. And that's what the spider's planning. But a wind blew and it fell onto your shoulder, and now you're screaming because you think what? Spider is attacking me. Spider is attacking me. Screaming, 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 thinking that I'm going to die now. See, at the moment you feel fear, who can save you? Who can save you? Only you, not a single other person. You, when you're scared, have someone else come and tell you, you know, this entire world is anicca. Just tell someone to tell you this. The person who says this word is anicca, I feel sorry for them. Because you have no control over yourself. See, when fear comes to a certain height that, you know, you've made this, you are now conditioned that spider is harmful, spider dangerous, spider scared. When you have this condition, now you cannot control yourself. This is why, you know, some people who are really scared of other things, say, if you're really scared of something, you have no control. You'll run Lulu, right? And then you'll hit the wall. I have seen several people, right? When they're scared, they'd run and they collide into a wall. And, you know, they do more harm than the thing that's there. All because of the connection they've made. You know, hurt, it's gonna kill, gonna hurt. You know, he's made this idea that this is what's gonna happen. But no matter what another person says, your mind is not willing to accept. This is why, when you are scared, there's no one who can help you but yourself. There's no one that can help you but yourself. It actually comes to the point where you can become paranoid. I remember, you know, there's a fact that in a normal lifetime, a person will swallow, if I remember, 4 spiders in their lifetime when they're sleeping. Tell that to someone who has arachnophobia. They can no longer go to sleep. Why? Will a spider come in today? Oh no. Will a spider come and go into my mouth today? No, you won't be able to go to sleep. Now every time you wake up and check, spider in my mouth. No. And then go back to sleep. All because you made this connection. This is going to hurt this. This. For example, there are people who are scared of clowns. Why they're scared of clowns? One day they saw that maybe a clown, they look really scary. Scary in the sense they look weird. And then this weird feeling. See, the more you think about, you know, spiders scary, you're making a stronger connection. That's why some people are completely terrified of spiders or completely terrified of clowns. Technically, clowns are very harmless. Technically. But yeah, you make this connection, this strong connection that this is equal to this. That spiders equal to death. That clowns is equal to harm. That electricity equal to electrocution. And this connection is what keeps you scared. That keeps you this connection is what makes you scared. So how to get rid of fear? How to get rid of fear? The only way you can get rid of fear is by understanding that this is not harmful, that this isn't going to attack. That's why, you know, that's why if people with phobia, they can get over their phobia. The way they do that is they call it systematic desensitization, which means, right, they'll say, hey, what are you scared of? Spiders. Okay, I want you to be, you know, be calm. Now I want you to think of a spider. Right, when the moment you think of a spider, you think, I don't like spiders. Like, calm. Okay, now I'm going to show you a leg of a spider. Huh? And then again, calm down. Okay, it's okay. Go to your happy place. Go to your happy place. Happy place. They say, I'm going to show you a picture of a spider. Okay, calm down. Okay, okay. Happy place. Happy place. Happy place. Now, I have a spider. You can look at a spider. Okay, happy place. Happy place. Happy place. Now, touch spider. Happy face. Happy place. Happy place. Happy place. And then, have spider. What they're trying to do is what? Show you that spider is harmless. Spider is not going to attack ego. And you know, that's one way. The other way they can do it, which is, I think it's called flooding, which they take spider and they throw onto you and it goes, spider. And then when the spider lands and starts crawling over you, you're screaming. But then eventually you start to understand that spider hasn't done anything yet. Spider hasn't killed me yet. Spider is harmless. However, that's not getting rid of the roots. Because why? Now spider is okay. Or this spider, incy bincy spider is okay. But daddy long legs? Oh no. They can fly as well. They're not okay. So what do you have to do again? What's easier? This is why the Dhamma is the only cure. Because the Dhamma and only the Dhamma is getting rid of the connection properly. How? What does the Dhamma do? How do you get rid of fear using the Dhamma? See, the first thing that we have to do is we have to understand why do we feel what we feel? Why are we feeling scared? So we've already come to the conclusion that it's because we feel that this is being harmed. Harmed by this. That this is being harmed by this. Now, this is the thing. Anicca, Dukkha, Anatta are the three weapons. Three weapons on the same stick. They are three weapons on the same, I mean, it's the same weapon but in three different points. Because you can attack these in different ways. First of all, one thing you can understand is what? Why do I feel scared? Is because I think this is going to hurt me. Now, what is this? What is this? You come to realize that, you know, this is what? This is causes coming together to give rise to an effect. Now, something that I really want to emphasize here is when causes come together, there is no effect. When causes come together, there is no effect. But there is an effect. Let me explain, right? When causes come together, there is no effect that is created. There is no effect that is created. So a simple analogy would be, you know, if I was to take, you know, fuel, oxygen, temperature as causes, put them together, the effect is not fire. The effect is not fire. Because when you think of the causes come together, gives rise to an effect, it's almost as if A plus B plus C is equal to what? D. Causes don't make the effect. The causes are the effect. Which means A plus B plus D is not D, but A plus B plus C is what? A, B, and C. Because this is a place where lots of people get stuck on. That when the causes come together. You know, when, you know, the legs and the body of the spider comes together, then there's a spider. D. But in reality, what is that actually happening? Those causes are still there. Are still there. Coming together. Coming together at that very moment to give rise to this effect. This is why the word effect, you have to understand the word effect. Because if you don't understand this word effect properly, what you think is a fixed end result. But the word effect holds the true meaning in itself. Effect means what? When it's the coming together of these causes is the effect itself. You know, if I asked you, like, what is the effect of temperature, right, on chocolate? Chocolate melts. So is the effect the chocolate or the melted chocolate? No, the effect is the process of melting. Because heat will affect the chocolate by melting it. So it's not the end result. It's not a result. Cause and effect doesn't mean causes and results. It means causes and causes together. So that's a side note. So this spider, what we're going to do is we're going to understand what the spider truly is. The spider is what? An effect. Effect of causes. See, once you understand this is cause and effect, automatically you understand what? If you understand that this is cause and effect, what else do you understand? In this process, that this is a process. See, it doesn't matter where you put anicca. It doesn't matter where you apply anicca. Because if you apply anicca properly, where does it attack? No matter where you apply, it will attack ignorance. Because remember, the sense of eye and this fixed spider are both an effect of what? Ego. Are both this effect of this feeling of separation, this feeling of separate. So by applying to either this or that, if you apply it properly, you are doing the same thing. You are attacking what? Ignorance. So once you see this to be cause and effect, you are also seeing what? I have to also be what? Cause and effect. And therefore, you're attacking what? Ignorance here. But remember, right? The moment of fear, at the moment of fear, no matter how hard you try to think about this, it will not work. When you are terrified, you try thinking about this, it will not work. Why will it not work? Because now your mind doesn't have the environment for the Dhamma to take root. It can no longer. So all you can do, because see, if you were to think that spider will hurt me, right? Now if there's a spider here, right next to you, no matter how hard you try to think, spider won't hurt me, spider won't hurt me, spider won't hurt me. What are you thinking? Spider, me, not hurt. Spider, me, not hurt. That there is a spider, there is a me, and the spider will not hurt me, will it? And now you're questioning it. So no matter how hard, no matter if you were to chant, so for example, like let's say there's a spider, right? You're trying to contemplate, you're scared of spiders, right? On top of your bed, there's a spider, right? So what you do is you're sat there, lying there, and you're thinking, okay, I'm now going to contemplate. Spider won't hurt me. 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 But no matter how much you think that, what are you thinking? There's a fixed spider there. There's a fixed me there. Spider won't hurt me. Or would it? Spider won't hurt me. Or would it? Because no matter how hard you try to think about it, if you have this idea, spider is going to hurt me, you can't get rid of it. Instead, all you can do is, at that moment, you know, try to put the Dhamma, trying is better than nothing. Something is better than nothing. So try to put them, or at least, you know, try to understand that that the spider is just a manifestation. See, the only time you can actually contemplate on this is before. Because if you're able to contemplate that the spider is a manifestation, then and there, when you see a spider, you're able to see as what now? A manifestation. And then you're able to remove yourself from what? The fear. Because you're not scared of manifestations. You're not scared of effects. What are you scared of? The fixed, insy-winsy spider. That's what I'm scared of. I'm not scared of effects. I'm not scared of manifestations. Yes, sir? So when it's a venomous snake if it's a snake that will actually do harm, still fear is illogical. Because, does the snake, let's say you're walking down a path and you see a venomous snake, right? And you've identified it to be a venomous snake. The fear that comes from within is because of what? Venomous snake is going to bite me and I'm going to die. But if you were to contemplate on, you know, where is this fixed I? Who am I? What is this fixed snake? What is it? If you were to realize that, you know, that this is just what? Causes come together to give rise to an effect. That you're seeing the unintended nature of the world. Now the snake, no matter what the snake does, you realize it's cause and effect. You realize what this is cause and effect. Now you realize what is death. What is death? This is part of ego. No one can die. What happens? The mind arises, the mind passes. That's all that happens. Well, technically, you're dying every moment. We're not scared. Technically, we're dying at every moment. Why? The mind arises, the mind passes. When the mind passes, where are you? When the mind passes away, where are you? Dead. But the mind arises again and you think, I'm back. We're dying at every moment. But when you see a snake, you think that, oh, I'm going to die for real. I'm going to die for real. But in reality, what is death? The cause is no longer coming together to give rise to the effect. Now, that doesn't mean that when you see a venomous snake, to come near it and pet it and say, you know, good snake. No, you have the knowledge to know that, you know, that this is venomous, therefore can do harm, but not fear. You see the snake and you think this can do harm, so you walk around it. Not because you're scared, because you understand, knowledge-wise, that this has venom that, if agitated, can bite. But I have something to do. I have something to do here. I'm trying to take Nibbana here. So I need to protect this body for that. Or, you know, say you're an arahant. You'll still walk around. Not because you're scared, because you realize that, you know, I'm going to now preach a sermon. In this sermon, someone could understand Dhamma. Therefore, you know, I will walk around. Not because you're scared, but because you understand that this is venomous. If you think about it, no animal actually wants to hurt you. No animal actually wants to hurt you. Not even a mosquito wants to hurt you. Let's say you don't have blood. Let's say this board has blood. Would the mosquito come and bite you or the board? Let's say you don't have blood. This board has blood. Would the mosquito bite you or bite the board? So does the mosquito want to hurt you? But yeah, you think, you know, there's so many mosquitoes here trying to hurt me, trying to take my blood. Why is my blood too sweet for is my blood sweet? I used to think that. I remember, you know, when we come to Sri Lanka on the holiday, right? And I'd be covered in mosquitoes, and the excuse I give to my cousins would be, that's because my blood is very sweet. You know, mosquitoes like sweet blood. Now, you know, the mosquito doesn't want to bite you, doesn't want to take your blood, doesn't want to take what? Blood. Because why? It for its own sustenance. But yeah, ego thinks what? Mosquito is coming to bite me. That's why, you know, you'll find it very difficult to sleep if there's a mosquito where? Because why? You are intense. You know what's going to happen next. You don't know when, but you know what's going to happen next. What? It's going to land, and then it's going to bite me, and then it's going to drink blood, and I don't like itching, and I'm going to start itching, and you create this massive story. So when you hear the sound of, you get so frustrated. Now try sleeping with that one mosquito just going around your ear. See how many hours you get to sleep that day. Why? Because you're scared of what's going to happen. You know, who knows? You know, this mosquito may be playing with you. Right? It has no intention of biting. It already has a full stomach. But, you know, it just wants to go, and you're just doing this. And yeah, you're so annoyed because you're thinking that, you know, it's going to bite you. But, you know, it's just there, just doing its own bit. You know, it's living its own life. But yet you think what? It's coming after me. Think about this, right? The bigger the animal, the more scared we get. The bigger the animal, the more scared we get. Is that right or wrong? The bigger the animal, the more scared we get. Most of the time, that's right. Most of the time, that's right. Because the bigger the animal, what's the next thing that we get? This animal can hurt me. For example, are you scared of a mosquito or are you scared of elephants? Elephants, because why? A mosquito, you know, you're bigger than a mosquito, so you can do more harm. But this elephant is bigger than you, so it can do more harm. That's why, you know, this is why. If you were to see a small beetle, and then if you were to see, you know, those big, what do you call those? Those big ones, really big ones. What's that, what are they called? The one with the horn? Or is it called a rhino beetle, I think? Small beetle and a big beetle. Which one scares you more? Which one scares you more? The big one. Why? The big one can do more damage. People are scared of beetles, but what do beetles actually do to you? What's the worst thing a beetle can do? Land on you. The only problem that people have is when they land on, say, clothes, they have good grip, and so they grip onto it. That's what scares people the most. But they're there to do no harm. They're there to do absolutely no harm, but yet, you feel what? It's going to attack me. I'm going to die now. Again, you're living in a fallacy. You're living in your own world here. This is why, when you have ego, the entire world revolves around who? You. So when a snake goes by, it's going to bite me. When a person is whispering, who are they whispering about? Do you know that feeling that you have when you enter a room and people go silent? Or, you know, say someone, two people are talking and you come close and they stop talking. You know that feeling that you have? You know. Maybe they're talking about me. Maybe, you know, who knows? You know, did I do something to them? I don't think so. Maybe they're gossiping about something that I did or something. You are now scared because, you know, there is someone that's going to be hurt. There is someone that's going to be hurt. This is why you're scared. This is why the Dhamma is the only way you can get rid of fear. 100%. If not, or else you're scared. You're okay with insibinsi, but you're not okay with dying long legs. You're okay with spiders, but you're not okay with snakes. Elephants. You're okay with elephants, but you're not okay with shark. I don't know. I mean, animals don't. I mean, you know, these are all ideas that jati makes. This ego makes. This story that what's going to happen, that it's going to hurt me. But remember, the moment you are in fear, none of this will help you. Unless you understand it beforehand. See, the next time you see a spider, if you're scared of a spider, the next time you see a spider, you know, come to a calm state of mind and look at it as cause and effect. See it to be cause and effect. And then, you'll realize that the spider is what? Part of nature. You understand what spider is part of nature. You understand that this is not going to harm me. That this is not going to harm this sense of me. Because why? Who am I? Part of nature. Who am I? Part of nature. Now, no matter what, no matter whatever they're going to do, you can no longer be scared. Because you realize that the world around you is what? Cause and effect. That you realize that everything is what? Part of what? Part of nature. That everything is what? Everything is just, the Quran says, everything is just energy. Everything is just energy. See, all we have to do is we have to understand. There's nothing you have to do. You don't need to, you know, if you're scared of spiders, doesn't mean you have to go and touch a spider. Doesn't mean you have to go and, you know, handle an anaconda to get rid of your fear of anacondas. No, all you do is understand. But you can only understand if you're willing. If you're scared of spiders, and if you don't want to get rid of the fear, what can Dhamma do? This is why, you know, you have to be someone who's able to listen to their teachers. If your teacher says, jump, you jump. If the teacher says, you know, stay still, you should be able to, no matter how dangerous you think it is. Because who thinks that? I think it's dangerous. Safe put. Let's say there's an elephant in the monastery. Will we have an elephant? Who knows? I don't think so. But let's say we do have an elephant rampages into the monastery. If your teacher says, stay put, what should you do? even though you think the elephant's going to come and, you know, take its trunk and throw you, you know, 3 kilometers away, right? You should what? Stay put. See if you can do that. See if you can do that. You're scared of spiders, right? And the teacher says, stay here. And you see a spider dangle. See if you can stay there. If you can stay there, you understand you have gone far. Understand you are able to attain Nibbana because you're able to listen to your teacher. Because you're giving 100% trust to the Buddha and the Mahasangha. You're trusting them 100% because you have faith that the Dhamma will heal. So if an elephant does come and your teacher says, you know, stay there, don't move. See if you can stay there fearlessly. Oh, you have fear, that's okay. But you're listening to your teacher. The teacher says, don't move. Okay. You see this elephant running, you know, running closer and closer to you. But your teacher says, don't move. See if you can do it. You know, let your teacher challenge you. Don't let your teacher babyfy you. Go like, oh, don't worry, it's okay. Don't let them babyfy you. Let them challenge you. Because only if you're challenged are you able to win. You know, you can't be spoon-fed. Let them challenge you. If you're, you know. So if there's an elephant, you should be able to stay put. The elephant is, you know, a couple meters away. It looks really angry. Stay put. Because only then can the teacher show you the true Dhamma. Because you're willing to listen. If you are going your own journey, if you think, you know, what does my teacher know? Elephant's coming, it's going to come and trample over me. I'm going to die. The teacher says, stay put. This teacher's crazy. I'm going to run away. You have your own agenda. Then on your agenda, Nibbana is not there. If you have another agenda, that means on your agenda, Nibbana is not there. If you think that, you know, my teacher doesn't know, then go to a teacher that you think does. That's the thing, you know. Something that you have to realize is that your teachers, they want the best for you. Your teachers want the best for you. So, if you were to one day say, you know, this teacher, you know, if you can't understand your teacher, then, you know, your teacher won't be upset if you say, you know, I don't think this is working and I want to go to another person. Because you need to attain Nibbana. So if you can't follow a teacher, then it's okay. Then you change. Because the teacher, if a teacher is a good teacher, the teacher wants the best for you. If you don't think that the teacher is the best, then change. But understand, if you change your teacher, you have a different agenda. And Nibbana is a bit too far. Because you're not able to accept what Vipaka has given you. Because Nibbana is what? The accepting of Vipaka. Whatever Vipaka is there, I accept. Okay. But if you think your teacher is not, you know, not good enough, then change. That's okay. Your teacher would like it. Because why? They want the best for you. That's the thing, you know. To attain Nibbana is not just the Dhamma. Nibbana is not just the Dhamma. Dhamma is just, you know, a small, minute thing in this path. That's why, you know, the Buddha could have said, Ananda, this entire sasana depends on the Dhamma. He could have said that. But he didn't. He said what? My entire sasana depends on noble association, Kalyanamitras. Kalyanamitra is not just people. It's not just a place. It's an environment. And that's what Kalyanamitra is. So, you can, you know, live your entire life, you know, trying to understand the Dhamma, but understand that that Dhamma is just a minute fraction of it. That truly, the most important part is the noble association, the environment of noble association. This thing, this is why your teachers are very important. That's why having a teacher is very important. To show you, to help you understand, and to challenge you. Whether it's Insipinti Spider or Daniel Longlegs, you should be able to understand why am I scared and get rid of fear once and for all. I think today we have our blood donation campaign. Those of you who are eligible to give blood, do give blood to help society as well as, you know, the blood of people who sacrifice their lives for the benefit of all sentient beings is one of the most valuable blood there is. I mean, while you're giving blood, what are you hoping for? May this blood, right, whoever it's been transfused in, may this person get this blood and attain Nibbana. That's why the things that you do here, right? The things that you do here, you know, this blood donation, the reason that there are many reasons why we do these things. One reason is because, you know, in society, the demand for blood is increasing, but the actual supply of blood is low. That's one reason. But the main reason is not that. The main reason is the blessings that run through your blood and through the Shakyan blood. The blood of Kalyanamitras. So if you're eligible, please do give blood. It's a very meritorious deed. Saving a life, maybe. But you know, for that you have to be able to be you have to be eligible to give blood, right? So there are factors that you have to fulfill. So if you can do, I mean, these, you know, try to do as many meritorious deeds as possible. Because merits and Dhamma are the two things that you can only expect from our monastery. Dhamma, which includes the Noble Association. Those are the only two things our monastery provides. The environment for these two things. Environment and Dhamma. Vinaya Kusala. So do take the maximum of it. You know, blood donations, then we have, you know, Dakineyos, we have all these massive events. We've got Katna coming up soon. You know, all these events are great opportunities for two things, Dhamma, Vinay, Kusalai, merits, and the practice. Okay, let's take a moment to transfer merits and conclude today's session. Let's take a moment to transfer all the merits we've acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting peace, losing Dharma, and engaging various meritorious deeds today. So first and foremost, let's remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of Buddha's teachings. And with immense gratitude, let's transfer the message to Bhikshu Bhikshunis, Upasakas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha and passed it down to a generation of the noble lineage in the form of a Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, to understand, to comprehend Dhamma. It's also given transcendence to all the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including all Tripitaka chapters, who have dedicated their lives to the noble path and committed themselves to the betterment of all sentient beings. Let's not forget among them will be the monks and nuns residing in local temples and nunneries who have always been by his side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let's also take a moment to chant the merits of Guru Sanat Nansi, as well as other monks resident at the monastery, as well as the Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let's take a moment to chant the merits and express our gratitude to those who made great efforts to do the same with the teaching of the Buddha, be thereby translating the sermons, sharing them out with others, inviting others to join them, made by the power of the merits. If any of them have been born in the world of planes, may they redeem themselves and be born in the bliss of plane. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to chant the merits required to our devotees, friends of the monastery, who for sake of merits continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes every one of you who have contributed to the construction of the monastery, to those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, alms, with medicines, as well as those who pass on the know-how and their well wishes. May the power of these merits, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain supreme bliss in Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's take a moment to chant the merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands, wives, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews, nieces, our elders, friends and acquaintances, employees, employees, and to all those who helped us, supported us, assisted us in shape or form. By the power of these merits, may they be healed in physical and mental ailments, may they overcome any obstacles in their spiritual progress, may they abstain from unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to chant the merits to the devas, brahmins, spirits, demons, primarily Sakadevas, was numerous gods and deities, who are committed to protect and fulfill the Samadhisasana. Let's not forget among them will be our garden deities, who keep a watchful eye of us and keep us out of harm's way. May the power of the merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom, may they abstain from the meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble footpath, and attain supreme bliss in Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's take a moment to chant some merits to our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all that have been friends and family to us in the long journey in Sansara. To all those who helped us, supported us, assisted us, anything they could, let's take a moment to chant these merits. Let's also take a moment to chant some merits to all the members of the armed forces as well the police force who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all those lost lives in war be the friend of foe. Rejoice in the merits of quiet today. Let's also take a moment to chant some merits to all those lost lives in natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, and time pandemics, reminding ourselves among them with those who have been friends and family to us in the long journey of Sansara. May the power of the merits, if any of them be born in the woeful plains, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blessed plain. May by the power of the merits, may they abstain from the meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let's all resolve, may the power and blessing of all the merits acquired through the day. We've been witnessing the event of many hundreds of thousands of Arahat Mahinvasis on this blessed land. And finally, may the power of all the merits acquired through the day. You and I and everyone who made this program a success become an Arahatanvasi or Arahat Mahinvasi in this very life in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of Noble Shupacham be with you all. The members of the Mahasangha will now transfer their blessings to you. Raga ginnen midetnva Dvesha ginnen midetnva Moha ginnen midetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin Sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin sukhita taravetnva mamada siyalu loka siyalu satnvayo Nibbana parama sukhayin sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayin sukhita taravetnva
निभान परम सुखयन सुखित तारवित्वा राग घिनी निवेवा द्वेष घिनी निवेवा मोह घिनी निवेवा निवन सेप लेबेवा निवन सेप लेबेवा निवन सेप लेबेवा तुनुंगे सुसियानंद महाकुंड बलिन सी लोग सी सत्यों में निम्बान पाम सकें सुतारित